I'm expecting.
We started our journey and it wasn't happening. And, you know, me having so many cousins who were older than me all started, you know, falling pregnant, getting married. Cousins who were like the wild child, partying, crazy, were now having kids. And he and I were like, you know, why is this not happening for us? And it was just so difficult because we were now being invited to baby showers and first birthdays. And, you know, and we were the ones who had done everything right. And we just felt that nothing was coming right for us.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. We are all motivated by meaning, which is why the Reinvent Podcast aims to bring you a wide range of information, focusing on all aspects of physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, so that you can make the changes towards a more meaningful, healthier, and happier life. And now, your host, Nikki Robertson.
Hi there, and thank you for joining me. This episode of the Reinvent Podcast is for anyone who is or knows of someone who's battling with fertility. Over the years, as a nutritionist, I've seen dozens of women go through absolute torment at the prospect of not getting pregnant. Sadly, too often, some of the most basic biomarkers of a healthy pregnancy are completely disregarded in mainstream treatments. Simply by addressing nutrition, managing stress, and supplementing progesterone, which are essential to conception and pregnancy, fall by the wayside. In this episode, I chat with Amanda Quakey. Amanda tells the most incredible story of how she and her husband battled to conceive and how they turned this experience into a business that helps couples along their fertility journeys with some of the most innovative and simple tools. Please share this story with anyone who you know who may benefit from this information. And please don't forget to rate and leave a comment. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been wanting to chat with you about so many issues around fertility and hormones for such a long time. What I really wanted to do was start off with what I love is when a person has a need and they can't satisfy that need, whether it be a health need or whatever it is, and they find the solution and turn that into a business. And that's what you and your husband did. So let's kick off with your story way, way back and how it all started and what brought you into this place of helping people have babies.
Wow. So, I've told my story countless times and, you know, just hearing you reiterate that we've now turned what was the biggest struggle in our life into a business where we are able to bless other people always brings me to tears, you know, because I'm so passionate about health and fertility and about couples just wanting to start a family. And so years and years ago, my husband and I, we the babies of two very big families, and we met and fell in love instantly. And we had decided at that stage, because we were so young, that we'd like to take about 4 or 5 years and just enjoy our marriage and travel and just, get to know one another. We got married I was 22 years old and he was 25. And, we had a fairy tale love story and a fairy tale wedding. My daddy's youngest daughter, so he spoiled me so much. And, you know, Ellie's family came down from Lebanon and we had just a massive Greek-Lebanese party with lots of food and lots of drinks.
That's amazing.
It really was just an absolute match made in heaven. And I come from a big family. I've got 13 cousins, him as well in Lebanon. Through our marriage, we then decided that we're going to do what we said we're going to do. We're going to travel the world and we're going to see different things. And so a year after we got married, we went to Lebanon. And he wanted to show me his beautiful country. And Lebanon is absolutely beautiful. I can compare it a little bit to the likes of Cape Town, with it being the beautiful oceans and the coffee shops along the road in Camps Bay and then the big mountains behind you.
Yeah.
And Lebanon is so special because there's a time of the year in March where you actually take a 45-minute trip up to the mountains where you can ski in the snow. And then you come back down to the city and you can swim in the sea in the same day. And it's just those special little things that he wanted to show me in his country. So off we went to Lebanon in 2006, and we arrived there on the 7th of July. And on the 11th of July, unbeknownst to us, where the country had been in peace for many, many years, you know, they had gone through those many years of civil war that had ended in, I think, I stand to be corrected, but I think it was, they had ended in 1992.
Yeah.
So all those years up to 2006, there was peace in the country. And at that stage, there were over 3 million tourists in Lebanon. And all of a sudden, on the 10th of July, war broke out in the country. The first thing that happened is the airport got bombed, and we now knew that we were stranded in this country. And it was just such a scary thing. Funny enough, before that had happened, there was this big book, like 7-8 stories of this big building, and they had, you know, CDs and books and, you know, everything you could imagine in this big building. And I said to him, I want to go to Virgin Bookstores and I want to get a box set on information about how it was to live in the war. And there I was, just days later, we were now under threat in a scary, scary situation.
Yeah.
And, it was at that stage, so I was 24, and it was at that stage where I had come so close to the thought of, you know, not getting through this and actually my life ending at this stage and thinking, I don't want my life to end without having held my baby in my arms. And do we really want to wait this long to have children and to start our family? And you kind of reassess what's important in your life. And,
sure. And
I think having kids was. Weeks went by, and, you know, I mean, there's a whole long story about exactly what had happened in Lebanon, and eventually we did get back home. And it was there where, you know, there was a stage where countries were coming in, so like America would come and say, you know, we want to take all our people out, and they would evacuate all the Americans. I mean, there were millions of people in the country at that stage. It was the summer of 2006. And so my husband said to me, look, you know, I really want you to go. Me having a South African passport, I was able to leave the country, but he wasn't. And I just said to him, and I laughed now because we're married for 16 years now. And we were married for a year then. And I looked at him in his eyes, and it was such a romantic moment because I said to him, babe, for better or for worse, I'm the best you have. I said to him, I'm not going to leave you.
Sure.
And at that stage in my mind, I imagined, you know, there wasn't Facebook and stuff back then. The world seemed a little bit smaller, but a little bit bigger, I mean. But I imagined leaving and going to Cyprus and then, you know, not being able to get a hold of him and him coming to look for me in South Africa and then me going back to Lebanon. And so we'd sort of miss each other for the rest of our lives and never actually be able to find each other.
How traumatic. So
I just thought I wanted to stay with him and whatever happened would happen. 16 years later in our marriage, I don't know if that would be my same response. I'd be like, cheers, babes. I'm packing my bags. I'm out of here, you know. That was my reality back then. You know, I didn't want to leave him, and I was so in love with him. And I said to him, if we do ever get out of this, I really want to start a family. And so that's exactly what we did. We came back to South Africa safe and sound. After many weeks, our families all freaked out, and we came back and we started the journey of trying to conceive. At that stage, also in Lebanon, I had bled through my pill at one stage. I think just the traumatic part of this all and going, you know, going through all that stress and sleepless nights.
Yeah. I don't think people really understand how trauma affects, you know, how your endocrine system and your parasympathetic nervous system is connected. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I bled through my pill at that stage. And when I came back, I was never quite the same in terms of having a regular cycle and, you know, all of that. Now, I got married very young and I was never on birth control before I had gotten married. In fact, I married as a virgin. So I never took any medications and stuff. I don't know, you know, I can't stand here and attribute just this experience in Lebanon perhaps being part of my infertility journey or whether it was being on a birth control that contribute. In general, you know, what we as a company like to promote is a more natural approach to, you know, birth control and stuff like that. Because I know that a lot of damage had happened to my body in those few years that I was on birth control. We started our journey and it wasn't happening. And, you know, me having so many cousins who were older than me all started, you know, falling pregnant, getting married, cousins who were like the wild child, partying, crazy, were now having kids. And Ellie and I were like, you know, why is this not happening for us? And it was just so difficult because we were now being invited to baby showers and first birthdays. And, you know, and we were the ones who had done everything right. And we just felt that nothing was coming right for us. And as the babies of our two families, you know, friends and family all over the world were now sending us, you know, try this and watch this. And one product in particular that was sent to me from my aunt in Australia, who's a pharmacist, she sent me a little saliva ovulation microscope. And it was so cool because at that stage, a lot of my ovulation tracking was using the midstream ovulation trackers. And I just wasn't picking up ovulation with that. And it was when I used this microscope that I first was able to pick up any signs of ovulating. I learned at that stage that just this beginning stages of our infertility journey and going to a GP and just a general OBGYN and, you know, not any specialists, you know, the doctors were saying to me, you need to have more intercourse between day 12 and day 15 of your cycle and, you know, relax and it should just happen and blah, 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 blah. And once I had started using this little microscope, testing my saliva for ovulation, I then noticed that I was actually ovulating as late as day 19, 20 or 21. So we were completely missing the gap. If having intercourse just to have a baby was what we were doing, which sort of at that stage it had come to that, then we were doing it at the complete wrong time. And that was really cool for me because I was like, this doesn't exist in South Africa. You know, we don't have this. I took it to my gynae and he had a look at it and he thought it was a really nifty little thing. And I continued to use it through my through my journey to trying to fall pregnant. Anyway, so years went by, about 4 to 5 years went by of us trying to conceive. And through this time, it wasn't just my ovulation that was an issue. You know, my husband had also had an issue. Through all these years, his mom never told us. His mom is quite advanced in age, but you know, she was an old lady. She is an old lady. She's still with us. And she never told us that Ellie had had mumps as a young child. And that had contributed to his issues with having a good sperm count and actually being able to produce sperm.
You've touched on so many points here that I think anybody listening can go, damn, I wish I'd known that. It's the most innocent of stories, like you said, but there's so many things here that we're just not told, you know. And I work with so many women who are trying to get pregnant, and these are things that first step is go to the gynae. They were given the same advice you're given.
Yeah.
Between day X, Y, and Z, this is when you should be having more intercourse, but it doesn't work. And we're still going around in circles. And, you know, I mean, who knew that something like mumps could affect male fertility as well? And that's also another point in that it always seems to be the female partner, the woman partner, who's the one that where the focus lies, where it's very much a 50-50 operation, you know, conceiving. So yeah, give us some more detail about what you went through on that side and how did you, you know, overcome the, you know, your husband's side of the fertility issue.
So you know, it was, you know, males and infertility. Trying to get guys on board is it's a tough one because 1/3 of fertility problems can be attributed to the guys. When ego comes into the whole mix, if we've got an issue, we've got a problem, we're very quick to just get to a doctor, you know, sort it out, ask questions, want to know more, research, research, research. Whereas guys are pretty much like, they just want to hide under a rug because they don't want to hear what they feel is inevitable or what they think might be the problem.
Sure. And so, especially when it comes to reproduction, virility, and everything that defines them as male, there's a big stigma around that.
It's really hectic for them. And I'd like to say that men are just a tiny little bit less complex than what we women are. And so when it comes to an issue like, you know, sperm abnormality or a low sperm count or something like that, it's actually a little bit easier to fix in a guy with just simple lifestyle changes. And so if we can get our guys on board, but it's also difficult. I mean, come to a guy who's a smoker and a drinker and, you know, who works long hours and tell him, oh, you got to stop smoking, stop drinking. You know, all those things that we know are unhealthy for us. A lot of times guys just turn around and say, you know, it's got nothing to do with me, or I'm not ready for this. Or so it is a difficult one. But once this does happen and you do fall pregnant, you know, oftentimes we don't think that far. When we're going through infertility, we think, I just want to fall pregnant. I just want to have a baby. But once that happens and baby comes, there's a whole new world that opens up to you and a whole lot more responsibility and running after someone and, you know, taking care of someone else's health. And so if it begins with your infertility journey of you having to, I'd say, quote unquote, baby our husbands and put them on this course of, you know, babe, we've got this, we're going to get through this, you know, let's make these small, subtle changes. Let's go see a doctor. Let's get a sperm test. It's almost like we're babying them, to be totally honest. Once we get through that and we're able to get the guys on board and eventually pregnancy does take place, it's going to happen again when you're raising your children, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I think you bring up a really important point, as again, this takes two to tango. And, you know, if your husband or significant other isn't 100% committed initially to doing the work, It's going to play out later as well. And that's something to keep in mind. Because, absolutely. And these discussions we don't have, you know, discussing sex and discussing babies and fertility is a hard conversation to have at the best of times. And, you know, there's, like you said, ego involved. And I think this is something that as women and as men, we should all get our heads around, because it could be a whole lot easier. And simply putting your case on the table and saying, you know, this is something I really want and this is what I'm prepared to do to go there is a really important conversation to have. Whether you're looking at libido issues or fertility issues, it's conversations that people are not having that's causing these problems. So, yeah, you bring up a very important issue. It's like what the environment you create early on is almost the environment you're settling for. And to be aware of that, because that also adds a level of stress. And as we know, stress really inhibits our ability to conceive in the first place. So what an emotional set of experiences, you know, you have to go to create this. It should be a simple and straightforward thing. Yeah.
You know, so many marriages end because of fertility issues. And a lot of times when a couple comes to me, now I must make it clear that I'm no doctor. I have not, I'm clearly just a woman who's been through it, who now has a business, and through my experience and through what I've, you know, I've been at this since 2012. And so through all these years, I've come across different things that might or might not help others, but I clearly come with just a place of purity and wanting to share my experience and what I might know, because what I say could just inevitably,
you know, having gone through an experience like you went through is you come at it from a different point of view. It's one thing having a medical knowledge and being a doctor and being able to impart solutions from that framework, from an academic and a medical framework, but also on your side, where I see things, and I see this from my side as well, having been through the difficulties and being able to help people from a place of having perhaps empathy is really valuable. There's nothing, you know, I think what's really missing in this day and age is that sisterhood that we had a century ago, where it was a tribe that got you through a pregnancy from beginning to end and taught you, you know, everything from childbirth to breastfeeding and how to conceive. And when you can communicate with other women who have been through, for instance, what you've been through and found solutions, there is a part of our psyche and emotional state that goes, I'm in good hands, I can do this. And we still underplay the value of what that does to the parasympathetic nervous system, to, you know, the whole system that enables so-called safe environment for conception. So what you do is really, really valuable.
And simple things like, I mean, it's scientifically proven that a man who enjoys the sexual act at that point and who, you know, has a really good orgasm, actually, you know, he releases his best swimmers, the best of the best of whatever's in there,
sure,
comes out in a really good orgasm. And we know the same with a woman, that when a woman does orgasm, she causes this, you know, particular, like a vacuum that happens, which guides the sperm into, mm-hmm. And so the act of lovemaking through infertility is a really, really tough one, because we get to a stage where having intercourse has now just become a chore. Before this whole wanting to fall pregnant and wanting to start a family, you guys were crazy in love. And what you need to remember during infertility is you need to bring that crazy in love into the situation again.
Yeah.
You need to start having incredible moments together, amazing lovemaking. You've got to bring that alive again, because it's not just going to happen on its own. It needs to be a conscious decision. Immediately when stuff like that starts happening, when you and him get to a place like that where, you know, you're having incredible sex and you guys are on the same page, or you're talking about this infertility, you're on the same journey together.
Yeah.
I mean, already things start changing in your body without you really realizing, without you having to. So yeah, mm-hmm. definitely one of the biggest things that I'll tell people is get back to basics. Bring that love alive again before you start getting, you know, all caught up in the stress involved with that comes with infertility. I know that it's easier said than done, but I say it because I know it's something that I had to do and I could do. So I know that a lot of other women can.
And when you look at the cost and the stress factor and the sort of clinical environment where what you go through in fertility treatment, it's anything but sexy. It almost becomes a chore and another stress. So how did you end up conceiving? What were the steps that you took, and what, you know, what was ultimately the answer?
So years and years later, we came to a stage where I was told that I would not be able to fall pregnant naturally because my husband didn't have a good sperm count. And then I had other factors like an overactive prolactin, My prolactin gland was
Pituitary. Pituitary gland.
So, you know, it wasn't happening for us. And so doctors here in South Africa said to us, you know, the only way this will most likely happen is if we use donor sperm, or you could look into adoption. And my husband and I couldn't agree on one or the other. He preferred to use donor sperm, knowing that this baby was coming half from me. And that was obviously the way we were thinking back in that place of, you know, we didn't know better. And I was saying, I'd rather adopt a child because I don't want another man's sperm. I don't want to have another man's baby. You know, if it was meant for me to fall pregnant with some other guy, I should have been married to that other guy. And that's someone talking from a place of, I was married a virgin, you know. So sure. That was very important to me. This was my husband. And I wanted to see a little child running around the house who was 50% me and 50% him and had his eyes and my smile or whatever. And so we just took a place. We just got to a place where we said, look, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to push this and we're not going to carry on with this. And so we did not have any kind of fertility treatment here in South Africa. But what we did do years and years later is we decided that we were going to go back to Lebanon, and things had obviously calmed down again. And we went back to Lebanon on this amazing holiday that we knew, you know what, we're going to do everything that you can't do when you're a parent. So we're going to go partying and drinking, and we're going to enjoy nightlife. We're going to, heck, you know, we'll rent a yacht and we'll, you know, everything that you simply can't afford when you know you're going to be a parent, you know.
Your second honeymoon. Absolutely.
Yeah, we were sort of daydreaming and thinking, well, you know, what's the crazy things that we can do this time around? And we did go to Lebanon, and it was a lovely holiday again. And I got to see more of the country this time, it not being in war and stuff like that. And Ellie's family lives there, and so a friend of Ellie's asked him, you know, what is the issue? Because in Lebanon, and a lot like Greece, it's like you get married and you have kids. It was quite funny to see, because me coming from South Africa, I wasn't even used to that. You know, I didn't really, understand that, but it was a big talk of the time as to why the son of so-and-so had not bear children yet. And a very good friend of Ellie's asked him on that holiday, you know, what's the story? Why did you guys have kids yet? And Ellie told him his story and told him, you know, what we were struggling with. And his wife sort of popped her head in the lounge and said, listen, we know a really good doctor here who's helped many, many people. And both Ellie and I at that stage were like, listen, it's over. You know, we just don't want to hear no again. And we're over it. You know, we've been through this. We know what the answer is. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do this again. So we left that night, and the next day the home phone rang and Ellie's sister answered the phone, and it was Ellie's best friend's wife, Rima. And Rima said, listen, I just want to let you know that Ellie and Amanda were here last night and they were telling us their story and blah, blah, blah. And I know this doctor. I'm going to give you his cell phone number. I've told him about Ellie and Amanda. I've told him that they're in South Africa and that he needs to help them. So give him a call and go and see him. So this was all unbeknownst to us. So she says to us, oh, tomorrow, you know what? I'm going to take you to this new shopping center.
Oh, and my goodness. Go
and I want to show you. I know. And you know what? Knowing now, that's like a typical Lebanese thing to do. Like totally like, you know, they didn't even tell me. Here I'm going to a gynae appointment and I'm not even aware of going to a gynae appointment.
Oh,
and
it was that just, is so sneaky.
I know. It was just so horrible.
Yeah.
And we got to this place and we got into this elevator and it was 11 floors up and the doors opened and I just saw this big sign that said Eve Fertility Clinic. And my husband and I were like, what are you doing? She's like, please, please, guys, just one more chance. Just see this doctor, just one more chance. We really, really want you guys to have kids and we know how much you want kids and blah, 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 blah. And here I found myself sitting in a gynae's office of a language that I couldn't even understand. And the guy, it was crazy, but he was the first gynecologist. Well, he was a fertility specialist. So he also, you know, he also took my husband and, you know, he tested him in a way that he had never been tested here in South Africa. He actually did like a particular sonar scan to check the testes and the tubes that flow down. And he had realized that because of him having mumps as a child, which we didn't know until that stage, that the tube that brings the sperm from where it's produced down to the testes to mature was destroyed. And so that's why we weren't able to harvest sperm. And even in South Africa, my husband had a procedure where they had done scrotal scraping to kind of get any sperm that they were able to use in IVF. That's when they said to me, you know, you're going to have to use donor sperm. Your husband isn't producing sperm. This doctor said, no, he is producing sperm.
Oh, wow.
And what we're going to do is we're going to use the particular injection, which he'll inject himself for 3 months. Sure. And then we're going to go in to where the sperm is produced and we're going to extract sperm from there and we're going to use it in an IVF procedure.
Brilliant.
So for me, it wasn't even a case of like, let me just gather some information. And I find that the stories that I hear now from other people is that once you get to a fertility clinic, it's almost like you're on this conveyor belt or you're on this train. Absolutely. That's not going to stop.
Yeah, you are.
You are. And at that stage, it's just like, right, on this date, we're going to do this. On this date, we're going to do this. And this is how it's going to happen. These are the medications you're going to take. And this is what he's going to do. And this is what you're going to do. And there's this tug of war that happens inside of you.
Yeah.
Of a sense of, I want this so bad. And it looks like there's an opportunity. But also, there's no time to even think about what you're about this journey you're going to go on. And if there's any advice that I can offer anyone at this stage is that if you are, you know, before IVF, before you get to that stage, if you are in a place where you're struggling to fall pregnant and things are just not happening, and IVF may be an answer or it may not, you know, it's a very expensive procedure.
Sure.
A lot of times people can't afford to go the IVF route. But say, for example, there was a period of time where you're going to try to fall pregnant naturally. And if IVF were even an option, it's so important to take care of yourself and to fix what's wrong and to try and assess what's happening And generally, that's going to be taking a more natural approach, like seeing a homeopath with an entrance to fertility, seeing a naturopath like yourself, taking care of your food and taking better life choices, because egg quality cannot be fixed after you ovulate.
And I think that's such an important point you're making as well, is you actually start looking after your body, or you start the conception process 2 years before you actually conceive that baby. Absolutely. So when we look at conception nutrition, is you need to make sure that the message you're sending to your DNA, which is going to become this child, needs to be coherent. And that has to come from both the husband and the wife. It has to come from both sides. So just going back to what you said about the smoking and the drinking, you know, having high insulin levels, which will affect your prolactin, incidentally. It'll affect all of your hormones. And that directly comes from lifestyle choices. So, you know, looking after your health, you make such an important point. We're not going to get the whole solution just from medicine alone. It's a partnership as
well. No, we're not. And what we know now, more so than ever before, is that when we start taking medications and when you go that route, then there's a host of side effects and a host of other issues that it's going to cause in the long run. So do we really want that, you know? And we think at that stage that, you know, I can't fall pregnant naturally, so I'm going to go to a doctor and a doctor's going to help me fall pregnant. And you know what? The doctor's going to do exactly what you're paying him to do.
Yeah.
He's going to harvest lots of eggs. He's going to fertilize them and he's going to put them back in you. And then you need to go home and you need to maintain that pregnancy. And if falling pregnant to start was an issue, maintaining that pregnancy is going to be just as much of an issue too.
Yeah.
And it just hurts me to see how many people go through rounds and rounds and rounds of IVF. And no one stops them to say, hold on, you know, let's take care of the cause of what's happening. You know, not just we're not just dealing with the problem here. We need to deal with what's causing that problem. You know, and that's what I feel, that you're not going to get that from just sitting in a doctor's appointment. You know, you're not going to hear stuff like that.
Ah, so true. I mean, the amount of women I've seen who have gone through the process 3-4 times and their doctors haven't even checked basic progesterone levels, and you can't sustain a pregnancy without progesterone, and simply putting them onto a natural progesterone, one of your products, I've seen work numerous times. I'm not saying it's the answer for everybody, but I've never seen it fail yet. And I can really say that with absolute honesty, is just making sure that there's balance and you're looking after your sleep cycles, which are wired to your hormones, which are there to, you know, that's part of the game. And no one talks about this. So it's a massive issue.
Yeah, it is. And we're just living in a world where everything is so fast paced and, you know, our phones are glued to our faces. You know, people sleep watching Netflix and, you know, they're scrolling on Twitter late at night. It's talked about everywhere. It's almost becoming norm now. And yet
it's a problem.
You know, it's such a problem, you know, you know, it's related to sex drive and libido and it's just such a big thing. It's such a big part of our lives. It's causing such a problem. Yet we fail to take care of those little things that we've got control of.
Yes.
And our life changes.
Yes.
We tend to jump into the deep end with like IVF or seeing doctors or going on medication. And it's like, hold on, there's so much you can do before you get to that place.
Sure. Sure. And so much you should be doing and keeping responsibility of, because you know, whatever you're dealing with, we tend to hand over the responsibility to the doctor.
Yeah.
And
it's true.
You know, you're not gonna have a healthy long life if that's your mindset.
No, absolutely. I mean, that was plain and simple what had happened when I got that little ovulation microscope, because I was waiting and the doctor was saying, this is when you need to be having baby making sex. And meanwhile, my body was saying otherwise. And only when I took the control in my own hands and I decided, right, you know, big part is track your ovulation, whether you're using a midstream ovulation tester, whether you're using a microscope or whatever you're doing, you need to be tracking that so that you can learn about what your body's saying. Our bodies are constantly talking to us.
Yeah.
But now more so than ever, we're just not listening. You know?
Absolutely. So let's carry on with the story. What happened once you'd seen this doc?
Yeah, so That's what he had said. It was again in the summer. I think it was 2009. And he said to me, "You're going to go back and I'm going to put you on a birth control. And then when you get your period, you're going to book your ticket and you're going to come back to Lebanon. In the meantime, hubby's going to be injecting himself. So we're going to prepare his sperm. And then you're going to come back and we're going to start the IVF procedure." And I was like, wow. And my period actually started, I'll never forget that month, on the 3rd of September, which was our wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And I was just in tears and I was like, sure, babe, you know, I'm going to have to book this ticket and go there on my own. And I did do it and I booked and I went there and luckily I had my husband's family who were there. So I stayed with them and they were carting me to and from my gynae appointments. And I started the IVF route, which was 2 weeks of certain different injections and enhancers and to harvest these eggs. And then it was time for hubby to fly in and we got his sperm sample from him. And so it all began, you know, and it was quite crazy because it had now become IVF on steroids because it wasn't IVF
literally
in South Africa. Like, we're paying rands for this. We were now paying dollars. And it was just so expensive. And I remember thinking, you know, I can't lose these babies. You know, I can't not fall pregnant because there's no way we can afford this again. There's no way I can't do this again. I can't come here. And, you know, we hear about other people's stories. And I also remember when we had started our business and we started going to the wedding expo and spreading awareness about, you know, infertility and this and that and the other, a lot of the young brides or the soon-to-be brides would come to me. And it's almost like a subconscious worry that we have of, you know, my cousin really struggled to fall pregnant, or my sister really struggled to fall pregnant, or my mom struggled to fall pregnant, and I'm an IVF baby. Do you think it's something that I'm going to struggle with in my pregnancy? We're now 10 years later, and so much more. There's blogs and forums online, and we're hearing about everybody's infertility struggle, and we're hearing about what other people are going through, and we tend to fall into this we tend to fall into this negativity pattern or this negative thinking.
Yes.
And so through my journey when I was there, I refused to allow myself to think negatively because I knew that that was going to impact the whole process of these babies actually attaching and for this pregnancy to be maintained. I really started to force myself to only read positive things. What should be happening on day 5? What should be happening on day 7? Not what could go wrong. And it's so easy for us to fall into those patterns, you know, as well when we're not trying to fall pregnant. We often look at why am I not falling pregnant? What could be the main cause of infertility? Where we should be actually, you know, we all turn to Dr. Google, but Google positive things of what are the lifestyle changes I can make in order to fall pregnant? Let's focus on that.
Absolutely. You know,
let's focus on good.
Focus on what you can do. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, don't focus on what the problem is. That's not going to help you in any way. And so one of the big things that he did do for me is he gave me progesterone. And I knew that was crazy because he said to me, and he was speaking in broken English. So remember now, I'm seeing a doctor who speaks Lebanese and hardly speaks any English. So he gave me progesterone and I said to him, "What is this for?" And he said, "This," in a heavy accent, "this for you is your super glue for the baby."
I love that. And it's true.
John, and I hardly knew anything. And, you know, I really was so innocent going on this whole journey. But I remember every morning and every evening that I was inserting, it was like a special little, you insert it intravaginally and you squeeze out the cream, and I remember saying, "This is my super glue. This is what's going to get the babies to stick." So choose, through any journey you go through, choose what you're going to be believing for yourself. You know,
so
what do
true.
You hold on to?
You know, so important.
Many times there's so many different solutions, or there's so many different paths that you can take on your journey to healing. And it's whichever path you choose is going to work for you that is inevitably going to work. If you believe that going through, you know, it's difficult to turn around and say this now, but I've been through it. So if you believe that IVF is going to be your solution, then it is going to be. And if you can hold fast to making lifestyle changes, changing your lifestyle is going to be your solution. You hold on to that, then
yes,
it is going to happen. You know,
yep,
it's the law of attraction, like so many people talk about.
Sure.
So if I knew then what I know now, I think my journey would have been a lot different. But I had decided that I definitely was going to go with whatever was going to be positive towards this journey. So I decided there that I really wanted to have a set of boy-girl twins, so that if I could never fall pregnant again, at least I'd have one of each. So what I did is I stuck pictures of little twin babies, a boy and a girl. I put them up on my wall. I looked at them every day. When my HCG levels needed to be a certain number on a certain day, I put that number up on my wall. But I also attribute that whole thing is that I was away from home. You know, I was in a foreign country. I had nothing else to do. I didn't have TV. I couldn't listen to radio. You know, this was all I really had to do. And so that was a big part. And I know it's not that easy. I know that if you are here at home and you continue working and you've got the stresses of life and you're in traffic and you're going about your day, you know, focusing so much on exactly what you want isn't always an easy task, but it is an important one. And so you do need to find time to really hold on to and be conscious. You know, you need to go through all of these processes. And all. So that's basically, you know, we fell pregnant and we had our twins. And it was a beautiful journey. You know, it was lovely. And I did end up having boy-girl twins.
They say you can only connect the dots looking backwards. And what a story and what a gift and a blessing you can turn even the most horrible situation into if you've got the right mindset. I think, you know, a big part of this, and I can completely resonate with this, is when you made a decision to do something and you put your heart and soul into it, as you've said, you know, you can probably get around any difficulty. It just takes perseverance and not being distracted. Absolutely. So let's go back and chat again about progesterone, because, you know, this is not just something that you need just to fall pregnant. We need progesterone to balance our hormones throughout various stages of our lives. There's a need for progesterone post-menopause, and many women are afraid of, you know, messing with the system. They'll jump at the chance to take an estrogen patch, but no one talks about the importance of progesterone. It is the peace hormone. It regulates your moods. It makes you more tolerant of what's going on around you. And no one really gives it its due worth. So let's chat about the importance of progesterone for women, and actually for men, because men make progesterone as well the course of our lives.
Yes. So progesterone is known as the mother of all hormones. And it is also said to be the one hormone that'll balance all other hormones. And what's happening in our lifestyles and, you know, how we are these days is that we lead an estrogen dominant lifestyle. Everything that we eat and drink, you know, our food is being injected with hormones. Are we drinking out of plastic bottles, or are we warming our food up in Tupperware and microwaves? And all of that creates these exonoestrogens and these endocrine disruptors that come and now start, you know, really changing everything. And common symptoms of estrogen dominance are things like mild depression, mood swings, panic attacks, sleeping problems, bloating, perimenopausal weight gain, irregular menstrual cycles, fibroids, increased risk of breast cancer. You know, people don't know this. You get your estrogen and you get your progesterone. And the way I like to explain it is that, like, the estrogen is the accelerator in your car. It gets things started, and it's that catalyst that gets everything started. And then the progesterone is that well-needed break So we need a healthy balance of the two, because if we're constantly on this estrogen train, when does our body ever stop, you know? And things like breast cancer is a huge one, or any other estrogen cancers, you know, progesterone is so important for us. Obviously, like we've talked about, fertility problems, that's a big part of estrogen dominance. Decreased libido. Men and women suffer from that. And then just increased risk of strokes and heart disease, chronic fatigue, migraine headaches. We know how much we suffer from things like this. And hot flushes when you're going into menopause, the whole menopause. You know, if we don't give our bodies that well-needed break, which is the progesterone, which kind of just calms everything down, and it brings almost like a mental and emotional, physical balance to help restore what's going on in your body. You know, we just on a, you know, you hear so many women who just say, you know, I just don't feel well inside of me. I just don't feel well. Something's wrong. My hormones are imbalanced. Well, just using progesterone can restore that hormone imbalance and just bring so much harmony back to your life in so many different stages of your life. I know I was saying just at the beginning of our call that I was saying that when I use progesterone, I don't see a big difference. It's when I stop using progesterone that as I'm about to come on, or I'm about to get my period, I'll be so snappy to my family, or moody, or, you know, I'm really stressed. I can't handle the day. It's all just too overwhelming for me. Yet when I'm taking, or when I'm supplementing with progesterone, I notice that when I'm on it, I'm not that snappy. I'm not that moody. I'm not, you know.
And it's important to know that, you know, there's progesterone, there's a synthetic progestin, which doesn't work the same way.
Yes, you need something that's bioidentical, so that your body can accept it, and it can, you know, it can work in your body as well as what it would if your own body was producing that progesterone.
So your body recognizes that as not something foreign.
Yes.
And can get your body to regulate your own natural production of these hormones.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and unless we stop all we're doing that's creating these estrogen dominance situations, we're going to have to keep, you know, we're going to have to keep supplementing with progesterone.
Yeah. So, and you're seeing estrogen dominance in little boys nowadays as well, because of our diets and because of our exposure to xenoestrogens, which is frightening, because, you know, you can see it in body shape change, in low muscle tone. These kids are not going to be able to have babies themselves later on in life because they're not forming the testosterone and the muscle mass that young children should be.
Yeah, I just read an article about that just the other day.
Yeah.
They're actually calling it the second pandemic. It's crazy you say that. And the thing is that, I mean, if we think about what life used to be like and what it's become, I mean, when I was growing up, I remember at school, I used to get you know, a sandwich and a little juice or water in that little square lunchbox with a square juice bottle that all fits into one little thing. And and now we're sending our kids to school with like all these extra little snacks and little crackers and chips and this and that and the other. And back in the day, the sweet aisle or the chocolate aisle wasn't actually a whole aisle. It was just a little section which had a few different chocolates and, you know, not as many snacks as we have today. And so what's happening is that we're eating so much more junk than what we're actually conscious about. And not only is that happening with children, but as, pardon me, as adults, the same thing is happening. You know, we're doing the same thing, whether you have children or not, whether you're raising your family or not.
Yeah.
What you're inevitably taking in is a lot more junk than what we're conscious about. I really believe that.
Oh, absolutely. It is a big problem. And also to remember that Every all our systems are connected. So when we are not detoxing properly, that's going to affect our endocrine system. When our sugars are too high, that's going to affect the endocrine system. It's also going to play back into the brain and affect the pituitary gland and the, you know, everything that regulates your thyroid, for example. And unpacking that once the damage is done is exhausting and not necessary.
It is overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. And again, we turn to pharmaceuticals because, well, if your thyroid's not working, you need to take this drug. And
a quick fix.
It's a quick fix, but it's what we've been brought up to believe is the solution. And again, we're disempowering ourselves. So like you said, going back to basics, getting the sleep, getting the water, getting the food as our grandparents knew food to be is such a big and intrinsic part of fixing so many health problems, including fertility issues. And hopefully over time, people are going to start, you know, getting this kind of information out there to start taking it seriously, because we know, and, you know, 2020 has been a blessing in and of itself, is really brought to light how dangerous lifestyle choices can be. If there's any gift to come from that, it's perhaps for a lot of people to realize that their health is in their hands.
Absolutely. And we're blessed to be living in a day and age where it's also easily accessible.
Yes.
So, you know, you can have this online store where you do all your organic shopping from and it gets delivered to your door. It's not that difficult. If you do just make the conscious decision to say, right, I'm going to make these little changes.
Yeah.
If we really look, it is easy to make them.
You know, yes, it is.
It is all out there for us. It's not something that we have to really go out and look for. And I think 5 years ago, it wasn't like that. It was very difficult to reach out and make healthier choices than what it is today. So
yes, it is really becoming more accessible. Yeah. And cheaper. The costs of living healthy is actually, it's not as expensive as people like to believe. You know, the cost of junk food, eating out, alcohol, that's expensive. You know, when you eat out at a restaurant 4 nights a week, that's a lot of money. You know, when you make food at home and you plan and you prepare, and even if you're choosing better quality, you're going to be saving money. It's a complete myth that it costs more to be healthy. I'm really hoping that anybody listening who's battling or has been through the production line of IVF, which is what it is, can take heart and take away from your story that, you know, there are other ways. You've got to just ask other questions. And if you're not getting satisfying answers from whoever's providing your services, maybe find somebody else that you can talk to. So I'm going to obviously put all of your contact details on the show notes so that anybody who's curious, not just about fertility, but any of these intimate issues, whether it's libido, whether it is postmenopausal symptoms for men and for women. I mean, andropause is another big topic that we can discuss another time, is how to get hold of you. So all of those are going to be there. And I hope one day soon you decide to write a book, because this will be really, really grateful for so many people to get the word out and to share your experience.